Hello, everyone, and welcome to another spoiler review here on the
Geek Buddies.
Well, we're back again here.
I like Emma's look of just like shock, concern, and what the fuck is really going on here? That's my favorite part of it when we do these.
But I mean, the thing is, isn't that correct for WandaVision? Yes. Is shock, concern, and what the fuck is really going on here?
I mean,
and don't
pretty on the nose.
And don't mention Ultron, or he can't stay for too much longer. We're getting into Emma just mentioned here. That is, if you look at the title of this video, I hope you did. This is what we're talking about. WandaVision, Season 1, Episode 3, our spoiler review. Spoiler review. So many of you enjoyed our spoiler review of Episodes 1 and 2. It's at over 11,000 views already. Thank you very much. And we are back again. We'll be back through the rest of the season to review it episode by episode. And let's introduce ourselves. I am the Outlaw, John Rocha, joined by these two gentlemen and this lovely guest here, Mikey.
I am Mikey, or Michael, or Mike, whatever. Just call me Vogel. Writer and producer of animated shows and content, and excited Marvel sitcom television person.
There you go, Shan.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm an animation writer and a television actor, where I've actually been on some multicam sitcoms like Anger Management, The Wizards of Waverly Place, which is John's favorite to bring up every year on my birthday.
I love it.
And Modern Family, which is not a multicam. I've only done two multicams, so there you go.
There you go, as a football referee. And of course, we're joined for these reviews by our very special guest, the great Emma Fife. How are you, Emma?
I'm just great. I am a recovering tour guide. So like, I am very familiar with some of the locations that we saw in the opening montage for this very 70s episode of WandaVision. It is really, really fun for me, I will say, because again, as I mentioned on the last episode, they filmed a little bit on the Universal backlot. Right. So like, seeing the stuff that is very obviously Courthouse Square, I just like the whole opening sequence in this one, because it wasn't in the actual episode, but it was in the opening sequence that I just like was losing my mind the whole time.
Yeah, let's get into it. You know, this episode, very much last warning, spoiler review before we jump into it here. But yeah, this episode very much in the style of the old school Brady Bunch, which most of us grew up on and Emma discovered on Nick at Night. And so a lot of things to explore here from the beginning, from the opening. The basic plot of this show, this episode really deals with the birth of the twins, who those of you who are immersed in Marvel comic lore will know who the twins are, what they represent, but we'll get into it as they come up throughout this episode and this review. But yeah, birth of the twins and what that spurs, and a little more of the mystery behind Geraldine. And by the way, I should say this, we didn't touch on this last week and someone brought it up. This is really cool. I forgot Geraldine could be a reference to Flip Wilson's character. For those of you who remember the 70s, Flip Wilson played he used to dress up as a woman and play an alternative character named Geraldine on his shows. And maybe that's a reference to that. Flip Wilson, very strong representative of entertainment in the Black community. So maybe that's an homage or a reference to him there. So I thought that was cool to discover. I wanted to throw that in. But anyway, we get the beginning here. The intro, very much reminiscent, as Emma mentioned, of the Brady Bunch in the 70s and all that. We get the hexagon shapes. We get Vision in his green and yellow shirt. We get Vision trying to construct a green and yellow playset. We get Wanda. They're having ice cream. They're going, all this stuff is going on here. Emma, let's start with you since you brought it up. What was your reaction to this whole opening, aside from and including the fact that you could pick out where they were shooting this?
When I was like, oh, that's New York Street. That's Brownstone Street. That's Courthouse Square. It was just all the Metro sets. They never looked better. It was like a mishmash of Brady Bunch and Partridge Family. Just the montage of like the hijinks of the neighbors. Yes. And again, like doing the grid Brady Bunch style, but very intentionally like making it that hexagon shape, which we were talking about how that keeps repeating. And so obviously like that could be a reference to Infinity Stone, specifically to the Mind Stone, or also like hex magic. Because that's like a wand of the Scarlet Witch sort of power as well. So, I mean, but again, like the attention to detail that they have in terms of creating these very intentional, like again, homages to these shows from bygone eras is really incredible. I like, who is the art department on this? I'm so jealous of all the furniture and just set decor that they get to work with.
Yeah, certainly. Michael, what was your reaction to this? And that opening song, Michael, had some lyrics. You being a lyricist, you've written some My Little Pony songs. These lyrics were on point. You know, 1 + 1 = 2. Great expectations lead to complications. Like, what was your reaction to this opening intro?
I think in general, my reaction to every opening intro has been giddy, giggling like a 5-year-old. I think it's so, I've been seeing a lot, and we'll touch on this a little bit more. Like, I've seen a lot, it seems like the fans are kind of split. Some people are along for this ride. Some people are like, okay, I get it, but like, give me the goods. Like, I want to know where this is going. I am definitely in the former camp. Like, I am equally as excited about the unraveling MCU mystery as I am about the detail of sitcom ridiculousness that they're getting into.
Right.
And as someone who loves TV theme songs, as someone who likes opening title credits, like, each one of these has been such a delight. And we are now getting, not quite, like, I saw a lot of this on Nick at Night too, but we are now getting to, like, my era of television.
Yeah, it's
really exciting and fun to watch. Also, you know, you were mentioning Vision with the yellow and green kind of making the swing set. That's basically the Brady Bunch swing set. I mean, you know, even though this isn't like a straight down the line Brady Bunch because they don't have a family yet, there's no, like, this very, all the little sort of nods to Brady Bunch, like the stairs, like the swing set in opening credits, very cute. I will say, I did read this somewhere, but I have to agree with it. I am also recognizing that when you're watching the look and fashion of these different decades, like, juxtaposed right up against each other each week, boy, we just all look really, really cute in the 50s and 60s. In the 70s, not as much. Like, the hair, like, it's like you know, like I know there's people who love their 70s fashion, but just, like, looking at hairstyles, looking at, like, little outfits and stuff, I'm kind of like, I feel like we swerved in the 70s, but that's neither here nor there.
No, I liked Geraldine's, like, Foxy Brown look in this episode.
Absolutely.
I did like Geraldine's. Yeah. I will also say, we'll get to this later too, but one of my other favorite things about this, while we're on fashion, is that everyone is so obsessed with every Easter egg and reference and what does this really mean, that I had somebody, like, text me last night and they were like, hey, really important question. I know you're doing your review. What did the fish on Geraldine's pants mean? And I was like, ooh. So really, really deep cut here.
Yeah.
Storks are birds.
Yeah.
And they like to eat fish.
They do. They do like that. Just for a bit with the stork.
Yeah, exactly. Shannon, what was your reaction to this opening here overall? And also what Michael's referencing, the fashion styles that President Nixon would probably say, these damn hippies. What was your feeling about this as you're looking at this?
I mean, maybe it's because growing up with parents who were the furthest thing from hippies that they could be, everyone from the 70s looks like they just smelled bad. I mean, and it goes all the way from people on the street to the highest levels of politics. I'm like, everyone here looks like they stink. Everyone from the 70s, it's because they didn't cut their hair. They've got these long mustaches. Everyone just looks like they smell bad. That's me. Everyone in the 50s, 60s, not so much. The 70s, everybody stinks. But in terms of the lyrics, though, I mean, a lot of those opening credit sequences from television shows in the 70s that had those kind of catchy theme songs, you know, it's a lot of, like, kind of nonsense. But when you look at what Michael had pointed out last week, like, saying one thing and meaning another, like, this all great expectations lead to complications, but it's groovy and fun. It's me and it's you together. 1 + 1, some sudden surprises come in all shapes and sizes, which lets us know that, like, more stuff is coming down the pike now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Well, let's go over this opening scene here. You know, it's perfect the way they go right to the outside shot of the house before they go in. The doctor is there. Dr. Stan Nielsen, which a lot of people are breaking down going, Stan Lee and the Nielsen ratings.
Yes.
Very funny. Super misogynistic doctor. As if you go back. As you go back and watch these 70s sitcoms, there's a little bit of misogyny
actually is a theme throughout the episode of things that we thought were, like, wacky and hijinks when we were watching 70s sitcoms. We now look at through a modern lens and go, oh no, this is not okay.
We put it in terms of fruit because it's easier for them to understand.
Yeah.
You gotta love Wanda's like, okay, all right, I'm not gonna decimate you in this moment.
Because that is the thing that I think is particularly clever and fun about this series is that even though Wanda and Vision are fully playing into whatever the sort of motif is for that particular episode in that time period that they're supposed to be in as far as television goes, you as the audience are aware that they are modern characters and they underneath the montage are aware that they are modern characters. So, but they're like basically playing into these eras, but with modern sensibilities.
And Michael, this section here we have that she is pregnant, which is of course happening quickly. That was a surprise at the end of the last episode. The doctor is monitoring the heartbeats. They may have a little quip, but Vision the whole time, Paul Bettany, Vision is questioning how this is happening so fast. Even says, what would the fruit be like at 12 hours? Then, of course, she Wanda kind of defer, you know, kind of goes, it's fruitless. Let's move on. And he escorts the doctor out. So what do we have going on here? Because what really struck me through this episode, Mike, is Vision is starting to break through and create more cracks in what Wanda has built here. And it's certainly here evident throughout this whole episode as he's questioning her more and more.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I thought was neat, just get it right off the bat, was between episode one and episode two, they're very self-contained as sitcoms. So it's it's a little bit hard to say, oh, well, is this happening right after? Like, we didn't see the transition. Right. Because we saw the transition at the end of episode two, and we saw Wanda with child or children, and they make it really clear here that it's been like 12, like this is a continuation. Like we are just a few hours after what we saw in episode two.
Literally the next morning, possibly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it literally is the next morning, like given the time frame. And yes, as much as we play, and as we've said, like just watching the cute factor of Vision and Wanda in these episodes, and as much as it's fun to watch Vision kind of play the nervous father, what's going on? I'm a little bit confused and whatever. It works on the level of the sitcom, as we've said, but you are 100% right. This is also an episode that is all about Vision being like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And this is where he's really like it. And I think this kind of extends to a lot of characters. It's like everyone is starting to be like, hold on, this is not making sense.
This is the
very beginnings of that.
Yeah, I mean, Shannon, he walks out after he walks the doctor out. The doctor says, I'm going to Bermuda, like they always do in the sitcoms. They're always on their way out the door.
What is it with Bermuda? Like, Bermuda is this recurring location, but it's not even a location. It's just a trope. It's just a trope of like, I'm going to Bermuda, but nobody actually, we never see Bermuda.
We never see Bermuda in any of the sitcoms, that's for sure. We went to Hawaii, but with the Brady Bunch, but that's as far as we went, that's for sure. But yeah, Shannon,
the only place
out,
we're allowed to actually go on vacation in the sitcom, it's Hawaii.
He walks out and he sees, after he, you know, after the doctor heads on off and, you know, he tells him to be mum about the pregnancy, he sees Herb, and Herb is cutting. He has stopped cutting his hedges and starts cutting into the concrete wall. Essentially, the symbolism of this division between the reality and the fakeness. And he's cutting through it. And he seems to almost be doing it with a smile on his face. Like he's like, ha, ha, ha. Like, what was your reaction as you're watching this?
Well, it was one of two things. One, it's just like, okay, we've seen how like the branches were sort of like the helicopter crashing. These tools cutting into that wall, it was like, are somebody trying to get in right now? But also there's the fact that, you know, you have the imperfections of this world, which more and more people are starting to notice. And is it just sort of like a non-playable character from a video game where you spy a character in the background doing something nonsensical and it's just bugs in the system?
Yep. Mike?
Mm-hmm.
I also think, and I mean, I do not have an answer here, which I'm kind of enjoying, but like, the question of how much these characters or these townspeople actually know, because there's moments like this one with Herb where it is totally like that NPC kind of like, oh, I was just doing what I was supposed to do. Thanks, buddy. Yeah. And it's very like Stepford Wives, kind of like I'm stuck in this thing. But later, and we'll get to it in more detail, but later when he's talking to Agnes, it's like, well, no, you clearly know. Similar with Dr. Nielsen. So similar, and with Geraldine in episode two and especially in episode three. Yeah. And it's starting to seem, this is just a theory and it could be completely wrong, but it's almost like when Wanda's around, her desire or the desire of whoever's pulling these strings keeps people sort of in the fog, if you will. And when Wanda's focused on this or when the focus is a little bit elsewhere, they're coming out of it and they're like, we are, this is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Might not apply to Agnes. Like that is a working theory that I'm dealing with. And it doesn't even come close to covering the Dotties and everything else. Like it's very hard to quite figure out what's going on, but this is the fun of it. And this Herb moment, and much more so than this episode, you know, episode one, we sort of had the hearts at dinner moment, which got super weird. And that was it. And episode two with, as Shannon was saying, the helicopter, Dottie cutting her hand, Wanda, who's doing this to you. We definitely got more of the weird moments. And episode three just doubled down and they were like, okay, it is fucking strange in this place.
Yeah. And we're seeing the cracks, Emma, more and more. Like she's losing control of the situation more and more.
Well, exactly right. Because I mean, what's happening in this episode, and I think that, you know, Mike, you bring up a good point, is that we start to see this weird scenario of him trying to saw through a stone wall instead of a hedge, because there's no more hedge to trim, I guess. Yeah. But it is, but what it boils down to is that like we're seeing her in this episode as she is, you know, rapidly getting more and more pregnant. She's losing control of her powers. Like she makes it rain in the house. She cuts off all the electricity in the neighborhood. So I think that that is all related and thus plays into the theory that we discussed last week, which is that she's the architect of this world and like the warden as well.
Yeah. Which is scary to think about for sure. Because there are moments in this episode where she goes back to that Wanda that was to rip Thanos into pieces in that tone of voice that Elizabeth Olsen uses so well when she needs to go into that place. He stares at her for a little bit. Vision walks in. Wanda is bigger. He's blown away by that. Runs over. And this is the first reference we see to Vision's speed. This is going to be important as we talk about the kids. Vision speed is also a focus here in this episode, Mike.
We did see it in episode one. In episode one, when he was at computational, where like whatever his computer business was, he was doing it really. That was the first time we saw it. But I think it is like for anyone who's keeping track, like Vision up to this point in the MCU, super speed is not one of the things that we associate with him. It's associated with another major character that we bring up in this episode. And so I think there's a lot to talk about there, but you are 1,000% right. Even though we did see it in episode one, they go out of their way in this episode to use it multiple times and be like, hey, Vision has super speed. Vision has super speed.
Right. And he makes a bad dad joke about being a papaya.
That was a straight up Shannon. That was a Shannon McClung level joke.
I thought it was solid, and I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I'm sure Shannon was like, that's a good one.
Nolan!
So we walk in, and then we cut to her, sitting in the baby's room. She said, and once again, the way they do the effects, very, very 70s effect, because that's where it's set. You know, she builds out the crib, everything comes together, the butterfly mobile that she pulls out, and Vision is there reading, again, about what to expect. Reads out some of the stuff she's going to experience and says, hey, why don't you sit down? But she says she feels excited. And that is her mindset, right? No, this is going to be great. This is so cool. It's Vision who's the one who's worried. It's Vision who's the one who's concerned about everything and trying to make sure she's okay. And then she has a contraction or the kicking Back happens. The
Hicks, yeah.
And then the butterflies come out of the mobile and land on his face and then go out the window. So yeah, even when she's not trying, and she even says, Emma, she's like, oh, did I do that? I didn't know I did that.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see these little moments where she is losing control of her powers.
Well, it's her just, I think, buying in more and more to her own fantasy. It mm-hmm. feels like a like grasping at this thin false reality that she's created.
Yeah. And Michael, we come up with the names here. We have this battle over Tommy and Billy. Vision wants Billy. William Shakespeare, of course, says all the world's a stage, which is a reference to this idea of this is also a fake play that they're all in as well, Mike.
So obviously anyone who's a comic book person, we've been talking about it for weeks. Everyone in comic books has been talking about it for weeks. But yes, Tommy and Billy are their kids. Yeah. That Wanda envision, that Wanda sort of creates in the comics, they are clearly going down that road here. Yes. But yeah, so fun to like have the Billy and Tommy sort of debate. Very cute. Yes, John, you're totally right. The As You Like It quote, the all the world's a stage and the men and women merely players. 1,000% accurate to everything we are watching right now. Right. Yeah. And yeah, and then is this where Vision then starts to get a little questiony about things?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He starts to wonder how this is all, because she's kicking already, and he's saying, "Well, I do want to see you, and you know how fast you're coming." Again, this reference to speed being a part of this episode for as well. And also, if you lay that whole quote out of "All the world's a stage," it ends with they have their exits and entrances. So this idea of people leaving permanently and people coming in to the scenes or whatever. So it's just fascinating how that quote is used here in this moment. Go ahead. Yeah, Mike.
Yeah. Well, so then we just get to this moment where, you know, they're kind of like talking about the fact of like, are people going to figure this out? Like, yeah, you know, like what's going on? And like, as we've talked about, I think this might be one of my favorite things about WandaVision so far is seeing them break out of the illusion.
Yes.
And how mm-hmm. and how their acting changes. Mm-hmm. And so when Vision all of a sudden is like, you know, that thing with the hearts was weird. Things with Herb is weird. Like, things are not right here. And then very, like, natural acting, like what we would have seen in the regular MCU movies, mm-hmm. just looks at Wanda. He's like, Wanda, I think something's wrong. And then I swear to God, I thought my Disney Plus messed up. Yeah. I thought it glitched. And I'm like, the fuck Disney Plus, my goddamn internet. But yeah, so like it was what's great is like when we saw in episode 2 with the Beekeeper where Wanda gave the very emphatic no and we actually rewound, this just doubled down it again. We just fully glitched. Yeah. Like we didn't even, like we just went boom. And it was very, very effective, clearly, since I got confused.
And let's put a pin on that because that happened just a couple minutes later. We do have the scene where he's doing the diapers.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, my bad. You're right.
No worries. Sitting in the kitchen and he's being timed once again. This idea of speed, how quickly can he put the diapers on? That's there. And then Braxton Hicks is mentioned. I looked all over. That's a real thing.
It is a real thing.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, is this a Marvel thing? No, it's a real thing. It's a real thing.
there's no Dr. Braxton in the Marvels.
But her pain causes things to go awry and things start to blow up. Things start to mess up in the kitchen. And then they come out of it freaking out and they go into a position to defend
themselves.
And this is a reference to this Marvel comic here. This was a little bit of a reference to this, the number one of a 12-issue limited series that they released with Vision and a Scarlet Witch. So that's what was going on there. So yeah, very interesting to see them kind of make these references and what have you throughout.
And this is also where we cut to the neighbors, where we cut to Dottie
and Phil,
By the way, if you look at the newspaper that he's reading on the front, it says, it looks like it says two new fire hydrants, but it stops at HYDR. And I don't know if it goes to the A, but the fact that Hydra is somewhat displayed there, I don't think that's an accident.
It says two new Hydra. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Also,
Dottie and Phil for like 2 seconds of screen time really stuck the landing on that joke.
They really did.
I mean, the fact that even though they're doing these super cheesy sitcom jokes, I am a sucker for it. Like, does this make me look fat? Lights go out. Whew. Yeah. Thank goodness. Like, it was so good.
And it was specifically, do these earrings make me look fat?
Right. And there's a meaning there, right? Earrings, two of the same, make you look fat, being pregnant. Mm-hmm. But also, the lamp. If you notice the lamp, it has two children wrapped around each other at its base. So that look alike. So it's that idea.
To Emma's point, the art direction team, the set design team, like, they are going overtime in these episodes.
Very much. I bet they love they're watching the reviews of people catching this stuff going Mikey, we get to your point here that you brought up here. Wanda's worried that the people in Westview, by the way, I was thinking about this, Westview, Wanda Vision, WV, two different things. Just it occurred to me as I was watching it. But anyway, he's questioning things, and then you get the glitch in the Matrix. Emma, what was your reaction to this? Is glitch in the Matrix, and he comes back a more understanding, a more caring vision, as opposed to a questioning vision. So even here, she's controlling even her own man to react to things in a certain way to keep the lie going.
But the thing is that Vision is dead. Like in the real world, we're pretty sure Vision is dead.
Yeah.
So it's extremely eerie when you think too hard about, like, how is Vision existing in this world? Like, is it his consciousness? Is it literally just her own construct? Like, is it somehow her own, like, the part of herself that's aware that she's creating this illusion that's going like, hey, do you maybe want to check in with reality? You know what I mean? Like, it's a question of like, who exactly is Vision in all of this?
Yeah. Well, you make a good point, Emma, because they had talked about this week about how there was going to be a post-credit sequence that they talked about it with Endgame that was going to relate to WandaVision. Like, they didn't really get into specifics, but, you know, Vision's robotic corpse, it was in Wakanda, and more than likely the Avengers did not leave it there. So the fact that, you know, Wanda came back, like, there is going to be some filling in of the gap that we're going to have to do in between Endgame and whenever WandaVision starts.
Well,
and there is something kind of beautiful. And again, who knows which way they're going to go, because given that Vision's a robot, there are a lot of options on the table. But there's something kind of beautiful about somebody creating the person that they lost to live in this sort of idyllic fantasy world.
Sure.
But in creating that person, even your made up version of that person still is that person and is starting to question what's going on. Right. Like, there's something sort of sad and tragic about that, that like, if that is the way they go, is going to be sort of just heartbreaking.
I think it's like, going to have to be Vision. Mikey, sorry. I think it's going to have to be Vision that breaks this whole thing, don't you think?
Well, just even in given, you know, we know this from watching the trailers, but when we get to next week's episode or the week after that, with the Halloween episode where Agnes is dressed as a witch and sort of says to Vision, like, oh, you're an Avenger. Are you here to save us? And also is like, well, am I dead? And why would you say that? Well, because you're dead. Like, whatever this Vision is, he is going on a road of self-discovery and he's going to start to figure things out.
Yeah. I mean, if you construct it, how much is constructed from his actual energy, his actual whatever? Well, so that's the question you have here as you're watching this episode.
And also, even though we know the Infinity Stones themselves were destroyed in Endgame, Wanda's power is directly from the Mind Stone. So does her creating a new version of Vision, does that infuse enough actual life into him, given her power? Like, it's gonna be really interesting to see how they slice this, like how it all ends up like rolling out.
Well, Bruce Banner in Infinity War posited, like, we could take the Mind Stone out, there's still a lot of Vision left. Like, there's no saying that the Mind Stone is the primary thing that powered Vision. Like, is Wanda powerful enough with her Mind Stone imbued powers to bring him back to life?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, she's creating babies. Why can't she bring Vision back to life, for God's sake? But yeah, we get her contractions coming for real this time. Vision starts to fly in a panic, which is a great little moment. Then they calm each other down with the breathing exercises. And then her water breaks. The sprinkler breaks all over the house. The water breaks. And we go to this ad. Shannon, I go to you for this ad. Do you need a break? Do you mean a mental break? Do you read my mind? Escape to a world all your own when you don't want to get away, but you don't, when you want to get away, but you don't want to go anywhere. Hydra soak, find the goddess within. So all of this references.
So yeah, I mean, I was actually looking at it because at first it was like, okay, she's got two kids. She's got a boy and a girl. That could be Pietro and Wanda. And at first I was kind of like, oh no, they got rid of the couple. Like, no, that's the same actress.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally the same actress.
She has a wig on. And then when they cut to her in the tub, the guy with the palm frond, that's the commercial man from the previous two episodes. And it's interesting because what Mike said before about we're kind of chasing things that may not actually be there. I think about the butterfly. I'm like, okay, where have we seen butterflies before? Doctor Strange. You see it in his first movie when the Ancient One sends him on his trip, and that's also what he turned Thanos's dark hole ball into a bunch of butterflies. Good like, reference. Is that a connection to Doctor Strange? We don't know. Right. Looking at the end when they show the actual cube, I'm like, oh, well, that looks like the Tesseract. But Wanda didn't necessarily have anything to do with the Tesseract. So it's like, are we chasing specters that aren't there? But yeah, I'm so excited to see more of these commercials and seeing if these theories that we have pan out.
Yeah. Well, and Johnny, to your point, like, you know, like I, with the first two, I was kind of expecting a, well, what's the next stage of Wanda's trauma or whatever. And this definitely seemed like a little bit of a different animal. But yes, you're 100% right. Like, you read my mind, which is exactly kind of what she does in Age of Ultron. As far as the first time we see her powers, escape to a world all your own where your problems float away, pretty much seems like where she's currently at. Yeah. And when you want to get away, but you don't want to go anywhere, like, you know, like, is that like, where is she? She's in her own mind. And then find the goddess within. This is clearly, Wanda is stepping into a level of powers that up to this point in the MCU, at least, she has not had. And so stepping into this new role, stepping into the role of a goddess, if there is some other bigger villain, some big bad pulling the strings, do they want Wanda by their side? You know, like, there's so many pieces of this, but that's clearly what's it about. And then the other thing I saw, I had stopped watching S.H.I.E.L.D., but I guess in S.H.I.E.L.D. there was like a reference to Hydra blue soap that they were using to mind control people. So the Hydra soak, bath soaps might also be a reference to that as well.
Yeah.
So yes, see, Shannon, I think we are chasing specters, but I think there's also a shit ton there. So I was like, I don't know. Let's just talk about all of it.
Yeah, yeah. What you're referencing is a season four. Agent Coulson refers to Hydra as, quote, mind control soap in season four. Also, one thing to throw in, and this is interesting from the goddess stuff, and Emma, I want to get your thoughts on this as well. In the Marvel Studios Visual Dictionary, here's the book notes. She may be called Scarlet Witch, but Wanda's powers aren't derived from the occult. Whether it altered her or merely unlocked something latent inside Wanda, the Infinity Stone on Loki's scepter bestowed incredible powers of the mind. So it's possible the Mind Stone did not grant Wanda's powers, but rather unlocked the goddess within. So yeah, that's another reference too. What do you think about the adding of those things?
Well, because as we say, you know, this whole idea of, again, this commercial was very different than the other two in terms of, I think this was more illustrating, it was more of like a look at the current reality almost of this idea of, again, like escaping into a world of your own, but also that we are dealing with a Wanda now who is in some ways that she may not even be aware of, because right now what she's doing is using that power to kind of shield herself and deal with her own trauma, but that she's now at a level of powers that we have not experienced yet.
Yeah, certainly. And we're going to get a sample of her powers next as we come out of the ad. Everything is soaked. They climb out from under the table, and then she uses her powers to basically blow dry the house and get everything back dry.
I was so worried about all the wet stuff in their house. I was like, oh no, all that beautiful set design.
Well, she handles it, dries it all. Her contractions start to get severe. They realize they have to go get the doctor. The phone doesn't work. So he says he's got to leg it. And he gets out there and he runs to go get the doctor while Wanda deals with her contractions. And then Geraldine shows up here in full regalia. Emma, you spoke about how much you love Geraldine in this episode. Please talk about this scene here with Geraldine coming in looking for a bucket.
I mean, this is your classic cringe comedy sitcom scene. and also, that's what it is. It's cringe comedy. Yeah. And also, they made so many references to all the dumb ways they tried to hide actresses being pregnant on TV shows.
I was just thinking of Felicia Rashad on The Cosby Show. So like every time where you'd be like, why is she always standing behind those grocery bags?
Exactly. And like the whole thing where she puts on the coat and she's like, it's like 76 degrees outside, but okay. And then when the coat changes, when she's in the kitchen and they're looking for the bucket, and her manipulating herself around the counter and then just holding the bowl of fruit, which again, we go back to the beginning of the episode where the doctor's like, well, we just put it in terms of fruit because it's easier for them to understand. And it was that very classic, for whatever reason, like Geraldine just keeps looking past this very obvious pregnancy that she has. which again was like, it was almost like a reflection of ourselves, of all of us willingly overlooking these things.
But it's also like, to your point, like we've all seen this in so, like where you're watching a sitcom and you're like, oh my God, this is so dumb. This is unrealistic. And they're clearly making fun of that. But at the same time, like, this is the world that Wanda has created, that like when these people and with Geraldine specifically, like when we get to Agatha and Herb and who knows what, when Geraldine is, it is particularly in this episode where she is playing a very sort of, you know, like, hey, I'm the black friend from the 70s. And like the way she's telling
black neighbor, sassy,
like
black
she's, she's the sassy black neighbor and she's not noticing what's going on. And so the two moments where she comes out of that are so clearly specific, it's easy to tell. So the fact that she's not seeing it is very much an homage to old sitcoms and the ridiculousness of them, but also kind of ties into the, you're kind of under this spell right now.
Yeah. And Shannon, we get a stork. What's that all about?
What? I mean, we're kind of linking it to, again, we're kind of linking it to the, like, she brought the butterflies to life and like they've got this stork that's, but her magic,
they painted on the wall.
But her magic doesn't work on the stork.
Yeah, the red powder. Yeah. What is the red cloud all about? I looked everywhere for a reference on that and no one had anything on that.
Well, the red cloud is just the 70s version of her
magic powers,
of that red lighting effect that they do. But the thing that really struck me about it is like, okay, she's not able to make this thing disappear. Is this thing something she manifested or somebody else manifested?
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about something, somebody else manifesting it. That's interesting too.
I just thought of the stork being like, hey, your babies are coming whether you like it or not.
I got rid of that stork. Also, that stork was funny.
Yes. The storks were hilarious.
That stork's comic timing was on point. Like when she threw that fruit and it was like rah, and like kind of like got out of there. Like I was loving it.
When it came out at first, I'm like, is this has to be a computer effect? Because there's no way you train a bird to do everything that it's doing right now. Incredible effect.
Yeah, agreed.
Amazing. But also I will say that one of the things that again is something that we laughed at all the time in I Dream of Jeannie or Bewitched, is this idea of these things that shouldn't be there, these powers that are manifestations of genie powers, witch powers, what have you, and then kind of fooling the nosy neighbor into thinking like, oh, it's just my ice maker. That was so funny in those old series, but this is again another moment of looking at something through a modern lens and going like, oh, this feels like gaslighting.
Yeah. Well, and particularly because this is the first moment in this episode where Geraldine breaks.
Yeah.
Had she not broken?
Yes.
Had she just been like, what's that? And she's like, I got that. And she's like, well, that's great, Wanda. And just kept going with the story.
No,
it would have been very much like the typical thing. But because when Geraldine hears that noise and stands up, before she even opens her mouth, you see on her face just confusion, fear, like what's going on? And she's like, when she asks what that noise is, the whole like sassy black neighbor from the 70s is totally gone.
Yeah. Yep.
And she's very confused. And then Wanda kind of does the, oh, that's my ice maker. And then you see her settle back in and be like, huh.
Yeah.
Anyways, and she goes right back into it. And that's what makes it so unsettling. Because you're right. Like when Samantha or Jeannie in Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie like did that, you're like, you're on their side. You're like, whew.
Yes, you're rooting all for them.
And with this one, you're like, I'm starting to feel very uncomfortable about what's going on here.
I'm worried about Geraldine. I'm worried for Geraldine. Yes, exactly. Well, two things here. One, the story is she works for an ad agency. What's ads? They present to you a fake life that you can have. You just purchased their product. The other thing is this, and I thought this was interesting when she said, I got promoted. I'm corporate now. So is this her first mission for S.W.O.R.D.? Is she being part of, like, this is what I wonder about. And so I thought the story had a little bit of a meaning here.
I was very split down the middle. I went back and listened to her story twice and I could not decide if, as Shannon was saying, I was chasing specters or if there's really something there. Like, I think that there's so much there everywhere that I kind of assume there is. But yeah, we know, even though S.W.O.R.D. In the Marvel Universe doesn't stand for sentient world observation, it's sentient weapon observation, we know from the end of Spider-Man Far From Home that there is a space station up above the Earth, and Nick Fury's there with a whole bunch of Skrulls. Right. And if S.W.O.R.D. here is an extension of that, when to your point, Johnny, the little moon men, spacemen, I got promoted. It all sort of does seem like it is a thinly veiled reference to her position in S.W.O.R.D. and where she's at. So I do agree with you. At first I was like, I think I'm going crazy here. And then I was like, no, I think this does make sense.
She asked for office materials, which could be information from Wanda, information about what's happening. She's trying to get these office materials. Like, why would you randomly go to a neighbor's house to get office materials? You know, and that's the thing there that I think she's kind of a reference there. But anyway, I want to make a quick reference to her outfit, which looks fantastic. But she has these kind of pulsar symbols on her, or sunflower explosion things. It's very reminiscent of the Captain Marvel design. Monica Rambeau being Captain Marvel there on the left. That is her design there on the left. And she's one of these people. Also is a reference to how Captain Marvel came in, too. Captain Marvel came in when Monica Rambeau became Captain Marvel. She basically had a couple of training missions. Then she's like, I'm in the Avengers. And then she was leading the Avengers. That's going corporate, isn't it? That's another thing, too, how quickly she moved up the chain. Monica Rambeau is no one to mess with, for sure, if you look at her in the comics. Let's see here. Where else do we go? Yeah, the clouds aren't working. Geraldine is we get Geraldine now. She drops after she goes into the nursery, she sees the crib, ignores the stork. Then Wanda drops the glass of flowers that she was using to cover her belly, and Geraldine goes, "You're pregnant?" And they go out, which is a great moment. And then we go to Vision running up on the car on the doctor, and of course the doctor says, "Right at this moment, when I'm about to go to Bermuda, my car poops out." So Michael, talk to me about this whole scene.
Well, it's great. I mean, first of all, I love the tag. I'll jump to the end first. His wife getting out of that car and being like, "What about my two-piece?" Like, I'm like, oh my God, every sitcom in the world. These people watched all the sitcoms. It was so good. But yeah, what I think is really interesting here is that, Vision runs in and basically gets him and runs off. And that's basically all that happens. But the fact that when we see him, his car is broken down, it is very clear that, like, no matter what is going on, and as the doctor is going to say shortly, he's not going to Bermuda. Yep. He's not going anywhere. He's not leaving this town.
Yeah. No, I mean, he references it at the end of the episode.
Right, like, right. Exactly. That's what,
no one's going in or out.
His line, so even before we get to his super creepy line at the end of the episode, even right here, it's like, it's that whole thing where you're like, I'm gonna go do this. And then the world is like, no, you're not. Oh, well, then I think I'm just gonna go here. Nope. I'm gonna drive away. And in Harry Potter, they have spells like this. In the world of magic, the whole like, I'm gonna do something and then sort of decide that I'm not, or there's gonna be these problems.
Right. There's gonna be things that naturally come up that prevent you from leaving. So it seems like, oh, it's just part of the whole, just my bad luck, but
there's a long history in magical literature of distractor spells and this kind of thing. And so it very much seems like this is that no matter what anyone in Westview tries to do, they're staying.
Yep. Well, let's go through the scene real quick. Basically, we go back to Wanda and Geraldine. Wanda's having the babies. Everything's going crazy. Geraldine goes, I'm sure there's a perfectly logical explanation for this. And then she has, and this is another moment too, Michael, you brought up the times that she breaks. She breaks a little bit in this moment too, when Wanda says, I can't do this. Yep. Geraldine looks at her in a moment of encouragement and says, you can, kind of like, helping her kind of maybe a little bit come closer to breaking out of this world that she's creating herself to deal with the trauma. Vision comes back in with the doctor as well, says, oh, did I miss it? The baby is born. Geraldine takes the doctor into the kitchen, and they have a very tender moment here, Wanda and Vision, with him embracing his child for the first time, that is quickly broken by the screams of a second child coming. So, this entire scene is just so well done and so perfectly in the realm of Brady Bunch or 70s type of comedy. And we have now two babies. So Billy and Tommy. Billy, Michael, and Tommy. Who are these people?
As we have said, in the comics, Wanda and Vision do have children or fantasy children, Wanda sort of creates this reality where she and Vision have these children, Billy and Tommy, twins. Yeah. And I think what's really key here in the comics that got me thinking about the residents of Westview is Billy and Tommy were real when Wanda was around.
Yes.
And when Wanda left, they ceased to be real. Like, it's not like she just created them and they were real in perpetuity. They were real when Wanda wanted them to be real.
Right.
And then they weren't. Freaked out a lot of babysitters. It was weird. But yeah, so I think that similarly here, she is now in this made-up reality, whether it be hers or someone else's or some mixture of that. She has now given birth to two kids that, A, given the gestation time, B, given the fact that her husband is a robot, should not exist. And yeah. So on some level, are not real. And I think what's really interesting about this, or not interesting but sad, is that we all know, like we've talked about this on dozens of episodes as we've been stoked about this show. And when you talk about in a comic book, oh yeah, she made up these two babies and then they got sucked into Mephisto because he had reabsorbed his soul, but then eventually they got reincarnated. And it all feels very much like comic book gobbledygook. You're like, yeah, that's a cool thing that happened. When I was watching them be born, and to your point, Johnny, the beautiful moment between the two of them, and Paul Bettany's like, don't you want to meet them as yourself? And he like goes back to being regular Vision, yeah. And they have this beautiful moment, and they're holding these babies, and I'm like, this is so fucked. This is so like, is Vision real? And if he is real, these kids aren't real, so now he loves these kids, but they're not real, and this is so bad. And granted, we're all comic book nerds, so we know that however this is going down, eventually Tommy and Billy are going to become real in some way, shape, or form, because they're clearly going down this Young Avengers road.
Yeah.
But just the whole concept of how this is going down, it hits so much harder and more disturbing watching it happen on TV than it does reading it in a comic book panel, to me at least.
Yeah. Emma, talk to me. Billy Kaplan and Tommy Shepard, that's who they are. Billy Kaplan, and they become Wiccan and Speed.
And Speed.
Wiccan is connected to the Kree Skrull Alliance. We saw the Skrulls here, Spider-Man and in other places. So Captain Marvel here.
Well, I was going to say, and also the very direct reference to Captain Marvel that you get through Monica Rambeau.
Yeah.
So, I totally agree with what you're saying, Mike, that like, it's so sad actually when you really think about these children who, don't exist.
Right.
But do exist, kind of, because as you say, like they are Young Avengers. So I'm very curious to see where we go with these kids within the context of WandaVision itself.
Yeah, and Shannon. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, just to further the point that you were kind of making, Johnny, that these kids, when they are reincarnated and become Young Avengers in the comics, Wiccan has magical hex powers.
Yes.
Tommy Speed. Yeah. Is a speedster. Yep. So the fact that they are leaning into Vision, I had a whole conversation with somebody last night about, are they just throwing this Vision Speed thing in now to sort of get it in there? Or because Wanda is clearly on some level recreating Vision, is she putting a piece of her dead brother in there as well?
Great point.
Yes. Which is why these two kids now have like this power that Vision never had.
Yeah.
It's not that their children are wizard and robot. It's a magical child and a speedster child. And so the fact that these guys are born and we're showing Vision has this speed power and we're about to get to the point where Wanda's brother comes up, those three things are not unrelated.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that Wanda has referred to Vision as a synthesoid, which that's the first time in the MCU that's what he's been referred to as, which is what he is.
Yeah, good point. And Shannon, we also get this moment where the doctor comes back in, has a little bit of misogyny just to say, you know, Geraldine, you make a great nurse. And they all have an exchange there. And then, of course, Wanda tells Vision to take the doctor out yet again. Take the doctor out of the house again. They're outside. They have this conversation where the doctor says, small towns, you know, so hard to escape. Almost as if he's like, please, for the love of God, help me. And then he sees Herb and Agnes having a conversation. And I watched the episode this morning with my headphones on. You can hear their conversation a little bit clearer when you're listening to the headphones. And she's going, I don't know where she came from, Geraldine. She don't know what's going on. And Herb's like, I don't either. What is she supposed to be doing here? So they're having this back and forth about it. And then, of course, they turn around and see Vision and they start to talk to him about Geraldine. So these are the two scenes, I think, that ends this, both the Wanda scene with with Geraldine, and this Herb and Agnes scene with Vision, that are really the breaks that are happening here overall. It seems like Agnes and Herb are trying to get Vision to get Geraldine out of here. Why are they afraid of Geraldine? What do you guys think she represents?
Well, with the doctor, it's a very deliberate choice of words. Small towns are hard to escape, not leave, escape.
Right, escape.
That means we are trapped here.
Yes.
Now, in terms of like I know last week we had talked about Herb possibly being another SWORD agent, that they didn't show up. Herb didn't show up until after that helicopter crash.
So why would he question her being?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, that sort of invalidates that theory.
Yeah. I think what we saw with Herb this week invalidates the idea that he might have come in with her. I think Herb
Geraldine,
is definitely
Geraldine is the only SWORD agent right now, we believe. What I'm really curious about with Agnes is her husband, Ralph.
How
she says he looks better in the dark. In the episode before, she mentioned like, oh, if you're taking volunteers to make someone disappear, can I offer my friend Ralph, or can I offer my husband Ralph? This is going to be really interesting. Like, if she keeps bringing this character up, because sitcoms, especially in the 70s and the 80s and even the 90s, had a history of talking about characters that never showed up.
We never saw.
Kramer had his friend Bob Sacamano, which was always a really, really easy reference. It was easy for a joke, but because...
Stan and Will and Grace.
What they've done thus far is it seems like Ralph is going to be somebody. Is Ralph Mephisto? We'll see.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, Mike.
Well, it's to Emma's point. It's the same thing they've been doing. It's taking a sitcom trope that we are very familiar with and using it in a two-level way. Like, the fact that there's a best friend who's always talking about her, like, her shit-ass husband over here is so normal that you almost don't notice.
Right.
Except that then you're like, well, wait a minute. Or what is really happening here?
Yeah.
I went back and watched this whole scene with Vision, Agnes, and Herb several times because, Johnny, to your point, I'm like, okay, so what's really happening here?
Yeah.
Like, they clearly, like they want Geraldine out, clearly. And almost as if, like, I was thinking of it like white blood cells in your bloodstream just attacking an infection.
Yeah.
It's like Geraldine does not belong here, and she's messing it up. But like, but
she
then
has
at
no
the
husband,
same time,
she has no family.
Yeah,
she has no home.
She has no home. She doesn't fit here. She's not supposed to be here. And kind of cluing Vision in, but then when Vision kind of starts pushing on it and questioning, Herb is like, "Well, yeah, it's because we're."
Yeah,
and then Agnes turns around and she's like, "Shut up! Don't you say anything." And so it's like they are, and then Agnes very specifically turns around and clearly, as opposed to other times earlier in the show where we've seen characters kind of fall into the sitcom and fall out of the sitcom, is just clearly putting it on where she's like, well, I gotta go, wink, and gets the fuck out of there. And then Herb kind of backs off and it's like, okay. And given, to Shannon's point, given the doctor's very specific use of the word escape, clearly the town people are trapped. Agnes is a whole other monster. So like she's, whether she is trying to keep everybody in line or not or whatever, but like there's a lot going on here that as we get into episodes 4, 5, and 6, it's going to be like, oh, okay, now it makes sense. But for now, it's just like, I don't know what's going on, but this is some crazy shit.
What is macrame? Does anyone know what macrame is? I don't know what macrame is.
It's knitting, right?
Okay. All right. Knitting, which means you're creating something out of, right? Something you're creating, you're building it out, right? So macrame, she's got to go macrame.
Yeah.
Herb says, I'll see you on the flip side, which is what? The other side of reality? I'll see you in the flip. Like there's these little, you're right, like escape, flip side, macrame. These are interesting little double references when they're using the words carefully in this exchange. But Emma, I'll go to you on this one. Now we go back to Wanda and Geraldine here, and this is where the real break happens. They're looking at the children. They're twins. She reveals to Geraldine, I was a twin. She almost slides into the Sokovian accent a little bit.
Oh, she full on.
She sings in Sokovian for the twins.
Right. And then Geraldine says, she says, Pietro, Wanda does, and Geraldine says, Pietro, Ultron killed him, right? So talk to me about this whole scene.
I mean, when she brought up the fact that she was a twin, to me, it didn't feel like her going, oh, I'm sharing this story. It was her reality creeping back in.
Yeah, good point.
And to me, I felt in that moment that Geraldine, who were given other things that happened in the scene, are pretty sure that she is a SWORD agent of some sort, yeah, or is at least
the logo.
She's got the necklace with the logo, which also sets Wanda off. And that makes her be like, you need to leave.
Yeah.
But there's no fixing you and making you fit into this world. You got to get out.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, it felt in that moment like, oh, Geraldine is catching on to the fact that like there is still recognition of actual reality in Wanda when she brings up Pietro. And so she was trying to like encourage her to go back into reality.
I read it a completely different way.
Oh, interesting.
But I think that's really interesting. The way that I read it was, I agree that in that moment, Wanda, the facade breaks down when she says, I'm a twin. Yeah. I had a brother whose name was Pietro, and like kind of like the accent is there on it, and then goes into this Sokovian lullaby. Like, she's definitely having a moment where the reality of her life outside of Westview is that the looking at those twins broke through. But then as she's singing that Sokovian lullaby, Geraldine, there's several seconds before she says he was killed by Ultron. And if you watch her face, she's like, kind of like, whoa, what? I didn't read this as, oh, I'm a SWORD agent who sees that Wanda's there. Let me try and like pull her out of this. I think she almost absentmindedly, like she's been in this fog. She's been in the 70s TV show. And she's like, you did have a brother named Pietro. He was killed by Ultron, wasn't he? It was so like she's remembering it too. Cause she's like, yes, I'm a SWORD agent. You're Wanda Maximoff.
Yeah.
Your brother Pietro was killed by Ultron. This is why I'm here. This is the mission. And like, it's almost like she's remembering too. But as soon as she says it, we don't have time to go any further because Wanda is like, what? And I will tell you this. I was watching this alone in my apartment. And you know a moment is good when a gay man audibly gasps and clutches his non-existent pearls. Like, I literally went, like, it was so good.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah, Shannon, she goes right into that tone that which I alluded to earlier when we saw her confront Thanos in Endgame. She goes into that like totally emotionless tone, like, "Who are you? What are you doing here?" That kind of, and it's menacing, man.
And in the trailers, Geraldine answers her and says, "I don't know."
Right.
This, it sounds like she says, "I don't remember."
Right.
That's what it sounded like to me. So as Mike had said, like she is struggling. She's in the fog, like she's affected by all of this stuff as well. So she is struggling to keep that tether to reality. But she certainly sees right away whatever she's done, it has touched a nerve.
Yeah. I think my perspective on it wasn't that like Geraldine has always been aware, but so much as like there was this moment of awareness in Wanda that reawakened that sort of awareness in her, like brought her out of the 70s fog as well, and was like, oh, wait a second. It was as much about Geraldine being like, I need to get back to reality and figure out what's going on.
And to be clear, I could be 1,000% wrong. It's going to be really interesting. I think we're going to get a lot of answers next week that when we all get back together, it's going to be like, oh, okay. So you could 100% be right on this. Like it's really hard to say, but it's fun to sort of go through all the possibilities. Yes. Oh.
And I think another thing to point out too, and I think this is something you mentioned, Emma, every time she has this break, Geraldine does, where she kind of reconnects or whatever, it's when Wanda is losing control of the situation.
Yes.
So it's like when Wanda herself opens the portal a little bit, Monica Rambeau, who has been brought in from the outside, kind of awakens herself. So it's like interesting how this is only happening when Wanda is losing her powers. So anyway, Vision comes back in, kind of says something about Agnes. And, oh, by the way, Agnes's brooch, three witches on it. Is that a Macbeth reference? You know, Vision was referencing Shakespeare earlier. I don't know.
Or I also saw somebody say, like, because I think it's three witches or in the middle, it might be the Grim Reaper with a scythe.
Oh,
okay. Like, is it referencing? Yeah. So like there's, who knows? But it's definitely, that's Agatha Harkness.
Right.
That's Agatha Harkness. Sure it's Agatha Harkness.
Is. Yeah.
when she turned to Herb, she wasn't angry at Herb, right? She was like, don't. So I wonder if Agnes is a part of this with Sword to try to get Wanda out of this situation. Maybe she's a part of this monitoring it. So one of you all mentioned it last week that she's the only one that doesn't look like she's uncomfortable in the situation. She's the one that's kind of in control of it.
And she's also the person that, again, like in that first episode, was pointing out to Wanda like inconsistencies in her own creation. Like, hey, you don't have a wedding ring and you don't know when your anniversary is. And that kind of stuff.
I think whether Agatha is there, whatever, whether she is there because she's part of the bad guys and she's working with Mephisto, or if anybody is indeed behind the curtain, whether she's there as a representation of Sword, whether she's there as a representation of the magical community in Doctor Strange, or whether she's there on her own, which I think are probably all the possible options. I think what's happening here is that Wanda is clearly not what we would call stable.
No, of course
and
not.
And I think that you have people within Westview that are like, we're fucked and we're just trying to like get by. And when we realize what's happening, we're like, we're screwed. You have Sword that's trying to get in because this is a highly dangerous situation, which we now, by the end of this episode, confirmed. Yes, that's what Sword is doing. Yeah. But Agatha might be the one who's like, guys, I'm a magical person and I am telling you, you got to handle this carefully, because if you fuck this up, this is magical nuclear winter.
Absolutely.
So the reason that she's like, the reason that she's trying to get rid of Geraldine possibly is not because she's a bad guy and is trying to keep the good guys away, but like what Sword is doing could potentially, as we see with what happens to Geraldine, be very, very bad.
Yeah, this could be a battle that's happening here. Like, remember, like, the Doctor Strange references are here. If you look for them, the butterflies things, as you mentioned, I think, Shannon. But also, remember in the comics, it's Doctor Strange who delivers her twins. And they've said already that Doctor Strange is connected, the Multiverse of Madness is connected to this. So is it possible that Doctor Strange is warring with Nick Fury and Sword on how to deal with this, and Agnes is working with Doctor Strange because she herself is a sorceress, working with Doctor, and her seeing Geraldine come in is Sword coming and trying to mess up what they're trying to do? Because we've been saying that Wanda's created this, but it's quite possible that it's Doctor Strange who's created this force field, which we're going to see in a second. And it's Wanda who's operating within this force field, and he's monitoring this because, like you said, Mike, if he doesn't, it's nuclear winter, like you said. So, yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, in the second episode, Randall Park is saying, Wanda, who's doing this to you?
Right.
Maybe Wanda is doing this to herself.
Yeah.
And this leads us to when Vision comes back in and says, where's Geraldine?
Right.
And it is sinister. I mean, it is a sinister expression she has on her face of like, it's fine. It's fine. She
She
had to rush home. She had to rush home.
And as she's doing it, the TV, the aspect ratio changes on the TV.
Yes.
She's jettisoned out of the force field. She lands here. The spotlight is on her. These military vehicles surround her.
Covered in Wanda's magic.
Yeah, covered in Wanda's magic. Great point. And then we get an overhead shot and we see the force field to our right, these pylons with electric currents that are keeping at bay. And we see these tents, massive tents, and a whole military installations, which we assume is probably Sword. And then we hear Daydream Believer from the monkeys, which is also about like waking up, obviously, from or creating a fantasy world to live in when reality hits.
Yeah, Daydream Believer is Wanda.
right.
It was in the trailers too.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. Very true. All right, and then we're left with a little bit of mystery and excitement going into episode four. So I hope the people who are like, "What is going on here?" in the first two episodes enjoyed episode three, and now that we're getting a little bit, probably going to get more modern intrusions into this world that they'll be more, because I guess we're going to 80s next.
The thing is like at the end of this episode we do get at least one big answer that we assumed all along, which is that like everybody that's in Wanda's world is a real person. Truly like co-opted, or be it she, be it Doctor Strange, whatever's going on to create this world, like an actual town was co-opted to be Wanda's like mental safe space.
I
think that to your point, that it was a reveal that wasn't a reveal because it's what we've all assumed all along, based on the trailers and other things, but it's nice to sort of officially have all the things that we've been talking about confirmed. Johnny, you're right, we know from the trailers that we sort of have a Family Ties style 80s moment left to go. We've seen Agnes in her like 80s aerobics wear with the big hair.
Right.
So we know we have that. I know, I've heard from a couple people that this is also episode 4 is where it goes big. We're gonna see a lot more next week than just the 80s episode of WandaVision. I think we're gonna start to get a lot of answers. So I think for people who have been feeling like it's moving a little slow for them, or they're not enjoying the sitcom part as much as we all are, I think next week is where we start to really see how all of this officially really starts to tie to the MCU.
Yeah,
and after watching a new episode, because this is what I did yesterday, it's like I watched the new episode. Then you take that information that you've been given and you go back and watch the first two again.
Yeah.
In episode 2, watching Vision show up at that, you know, community watch type meeting, and how off, you know, they are very unsettled with the fact that he's there. And again, it's like, what is Vision in this world?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Vision is, as Emma's pointed out, Vision is dead.
Yeah, right. He's dead.
And they're trying to negotiate this world with him there as well, because they have to. Whereas Geraldine, they know she has no home, no family, no husband. They got to jettison her out of there. Sorry, Mike, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, I love all the conjecture about Mephisto and Nightmare and getting into the more supernatural parts of the MCU. And I think that's all great. But part of me kind of hopes that we go a simpler route and that this really is just Wanda dealing with her loss and her power. Now, I'm okay if it's like her powers doing all of this has attracted somebody else, or if the Mephisto type character, whoever it is almost like the magical drug dealer who shows up and says, hey, I can help you jumpstart your powers so that you can have all of this, but has an ulterior motive. But I think the fact that this is Wanda doing this and trying to make the world that she wants because she's been through so much trauma is going to be the more emotionally impactful and affecting thing ultimately. So I really hope that however these other pieces come in, we still stay true to this sort of emotional core that they're building between Wanda and Vision.
Yeah. And you know, so I saw a review last week. It said this is like every couple episodes is the next stage of grief. So you know, and we see her more and more, especially in this episode, we see her losing her grip on the surrounding world and being able to control the outside world from coming in.
Because, you know, for a brief moment in this episode, she's confronting the reality of the fact that she was a twin and her brother is not there. Yeah. Again, it was Geraldine who was like, he was killed by Ultron. And she's like, nope, you got to go. So,
Do we think he's coming? Do we think he's coming back? Do we think we're going to get Aaron Taylor-Johnson or Evan Peters? Who are we getting?
I would not be surprised if we did get Aaron Taylor-Johnson in an episode, just because, again, that would be, and it could go either way. I won't be surprised if he shows up. I won't be surprised if he doesn't show up. But if he does show up, that is very much in line with her trying to like recraft her reality into something that is happier for her.
I also know there's been these Evan Peters rumors. I believe like the guy who did the dubbing for Shannon?
Well, no. That's my inner
Shannon's
monologue.
Like, Evan Peters not.
Here's the thing. I would think that, for those who don't know, Evan Peters is the one who played Pietro in the Fox franchises as the mutant, Quicksilver Pietro. And if we did not know that half the villains from other Spider-Man movies were coming into Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And if we did not know that the literal name of Doctor Strange 2, where Wanda shows up, is Multiverse of Madness, it all of a sudden feels like it's fair game. It's fair game to say, my brother in this reality died, and my magic gets to the point where I literally pull in my brother from another reality.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's potentially on the table. Okay.
Yeah. But when are we going to see Daddy Suri and McKellen?
Or Fassbender, either one.
Yeah, I'll pick either.
All with Fox being under Disney's window. But also this idea, Michael, that you were referencing, the Spanish voiceover artist for Evan Peters revealed on Twitter that he might be coming back and then deleted that tweet. So, you know, so it's a little bit of the possibility of what Quicksilver we're going to get, but it's going to be fun when he does show up.
I will say, however they handle it,
I want the light blue outfit with the Thunderbolts. I want it! Anyway,
I, I do, whether, however they handle it, and whether we do actually see Pietro, either version of him, that's all the fun geeky stuff. I will say that just from an emotional storytelling standpoint, I do love that they're sort of coming back around to this because, you know, in the we had the two of them in Age of Ultron. Pietro died. And uh-oh. Then...
Damn it. Have we lost him? Oh, there he goes.
Am I here? Am I here?
Yeah, there you go. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I got you.
I stepped into the multiverse. Sorry. I know. I was just going to say that I love that we're coming back around to it because we didn't really... Once we got to Civil War, we were sort of on a road to Infinity War and Endgame, and we didn't really touch on Pietro. And right. So the fact that as we're dealing with Wanda's trauma, losing Vision, that we are going back to Age of Ultron and taking that piece and actually giving it storytelling heft, I think is really smart on their part.
Agreed. Agreed. And we shall see. All right. Well, there's our spoiler review for episode 3 of WandaVision. We're all on the edge of our seat for episode 4, seeing where it's going to go, what we're going to get. Hopefully we get Agnes in that 80s workout, Jane Fonda gear. That's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll see more with Herb. Remember, Herb's the one that gave Vision the big red to gum up his works. There's more here with Herb that I think we're going to explore. And Norm, who some people think is the closet communist. I don't know. We'll see. But so much to explore here. Oh, thank God. We'll see. And Dottie as well. Much love to you all for watching this. So let's go around the horn. Emma, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm at Emma Fife all over the internet, wherever Emma Fifes are sold. Find me on Twitter, Instagram, my Twitch channel. Also check out the work that I am doing over on Venn. You can check out what we've got at Venn.tv or the Venn download on YouTube channel.
Great stuff.
YouTube. Just on YouTube channel, the Venn download YouTube channel on YouTube. That's what I was trying to say.
There you go. Shannon, what are we going to tell them?
Yeah, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MK2. And if you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Mikey?
Look, we don't know if Vision is real. We don't know if Tommy and Billy are real. But I can tell you that we are very real and needy, and we need your help. We'd love for you to help us get more people watching this, get more people joining into the Geek Buddies reviews, Geek Buddies show. So go ahead and hit the like button below. Subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw page. There is a ton of amazing content. If you are listening to us on Anchor or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, go ahead and rate us, leave some comments. It helps us go up in the rankings. And the best thing that you can do is share this link on Twitter, share this link with your friends. As you're talking about WandaVision and you sound super, super smart, and they're like, where did you hear that? Send this link their way. The more people that are coming into the conversation, the more fun that we have. We love talking to you guys in the comments below. We love talking to you guys on Twitter. So spread the love around, and you know, even to other multiverses, just take it far and wide.
There you go. All right. Thanks everybody so much for joining us here. We'll talk to you next week with another brand new spoiler review episode of WandaVision, episode 4 here on the
Geek
Buddies.
Hey!